Five Aspects of Woman, Lesson 18, Glory of Man, Created. 1 Corinthians 11 is about headship. It explains that God is the head of Christ, Christ is the head of man, and man is the head of woman. According to Paul, these headship truths should affect the behavior of believers in public worship. Embedded in his teaching on decorum in worship is our fifth and final definitive statement about woman from the Bible. The key verses are 7 through 9. For a man ought not to have his head covered, since he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of man. For man does not originate from woman, but woman from man. For indeed man was not created for the woman's sake, but woman for the man's sake. We have dealt already with the issues of headship and submission in the helper-completer aspect in Genesis 2, where we saw woman created for and from the man at the beginning of creation. In Genesis 2, the key and defining word was helper. In 1 Corinthians 11, we have a different view. The topic is worship, and the key word is glory, a subject we have not covered in the four previous aspects. Before we talk about glory, we need to review image. 1 Corinthians 11:7 says, "Man is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of man." It does not specify in whose image woman is. Some teachers down through church history have said that woman is in the image of man. She is an image of an image. This is wrong. Remember from our Mistress Created lesson that woman is in the image of God just as the man is. Paul does not say woman is in the image of man. He assumes the truth of Genesis 1, that she is in the image of God. The glory in man and woman is different. In 1 Corinthians 15:41, Paul writes, "There is one glory of the sun, and another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars, for star differs from star in glory. Each part of God's creation reflects a different glory. In image, man and woman are alike. In glory, they differ." Before we can understand what it means for man to be the glory of God or for woman to be the glory of man, let us define glory. First, to glorify or to give glory is to give praise or honor. We might say the man glorified God by telling about Christ's great deeds, or the soldier was honored by a 21-gun salute. In this meaning of glory, something is done to give praise or honor to the one who is being glorified. This is giving glory by doing something. Another way to glorify is by being something, showing forth praiseworthy and distinguishing characteristics. Proverbs 20:29 says, "The glory of young men is their strength, and the honor of old men is their gray hair." This means there is something categorically praiseworthy that distinguishes young men. They are vigorous and strong. Their muscles and their strength are their glory. Old men do not have that glory. What is distinguishing and remarkable about old men is that they have longevity and wisdom based on experience. Gray hair is a symbol or evidence that highlights and shows forth the glory of old men, their years. We will not be able to understand how woman is the glory of man apart from understanding how man is the glory of God. Man is the glory of God in at least three ways. Two are based on who man is. The third is based on something man does. First, man's physical bearing and physique show forth evidence of strength and authority. Ultimate strength and authority belong to God alone, but God has granted to men evidences of strength and authority. Man is characterized by heavier bones, bigger muscles, a deeper voice, and chiseled features, the heavier brow and the jutting jaw. All these characteristics project an aura of power and strength. Man's bearing is different from woman's. It is characterized by self-possession and decisiveness, bespeaking authority. It is completely different from the more graceful sway of the woman. Proverbs 30:29-31 says, "There are three things which are stately in their march, even four which are stately when they walk: the lion, which is mighty among beasts and does not retreat before any; the strutting rooster; the male goat also; and a king, when his army is with him." This is a proverb about the stateliness of masculine bearing, a glory which bespeaks courage and leadership. Consistently, and over the decades, men have ranked overwhelmingly as the box office draws for moviegoers. We like to see men or manly bearing and physique in action. As much as we like to see beautiful women in the movies, they are not nearly as important to most moviegoers as manly men. However, as my husband and I were walking through a photographer's studio one day, I noticed that most of the pictures were of women. I said, "Where are some pictures of men?" My husband replied, "It is very hard to take good still pictures of men, but photographs are a great medium for capturing the beauty of women." I thought about how many magazine covers have beautiful women on them. Action and bearing one can see only through movement. Beauty, on the other hand, is made for gazing upon. It makes sense. Men in movies, women on covers. It's a difference in glory. Think about the masculine voice. Think of the voices of a powerful tenor, a resonating bass, or the projection of a skillful stage actor. All different, but all communicating a strength, authority, and depth, completely unlike the feminine voice. Think about the sound of a men's choir. It is a glory different from the clear, high, and pure beauty of a feminine choir. Ultimately, all power and authority reside in God. He granted to men the honor of displaying these characteristics in their physical bodies and bearing. This is the first way men are the glory of God. The second way men show forth the glory of God is in sharing with God his masculine roles. Roles such as father, son, bridegroom, husband, warrior, king, and priest. Men take these roles by virtue of their created masculinity. God is the Father, the ultimate Father. Christ is his Son. Christ is the bridegroom. God the Father and the Son husband Israel and the church in covenant love. Exodus 15:3 declares that God is a warrior. In Malachi 1:14, God insists he is a great king, worthy of honor. Hebrews 3:1 says Christ is the ultimate high priest. These are the roles of God himself. When men take these roles, they are a glory to God. They show what God is like in a way that women do not. When righteously performed, these roles contain a consistent pattern of activities. Men are to be initiating lovers, leaders, protectors, providers, saviors, and husbandmen. The more men fulfill these activities, the more they are the glory of God, the more they show what God is like. Finally, men are the glory of God because they are created to be the worship leaders for the human race. This is true in both the Old and New Testaments. The patriarchs built the altars and led their families in praising God. Moses led the nation in building and dedicating the tabernacle as a place to worship God. David wrote most of the Psalms, designed numerous musical instruments, organized the Levitical choirs, and danced before the Lord with all his might, thus leading the nation in worship. He also planned and prepared for the construction of the temple. Solomon, his son, built and dedicated it. The New Testament commands that men and not women be ordained to lead the church as elders and pastors, leading in the interpreting and defending of Scripture, and in the care and discipline of the flock. Men are to lead in congregational prayer. According to 1 Corinthians 11, men are to uncover their heads in worship because Christ is directly their head. Man and woman should be distinguished in worship because they have different heads and different glories. When women are covered in worship, two secondary glories are thus de-emphasized: the glory of man, who is woman, and the glory of the woman, which is her hair. Even in eternity, a great and blazing testimony to man's headship of God's people will shine forth in the New Jerusalem. There the names of 24 men will be inscribed forever. The names of the 12 patriarchs of Israel will be on the gates, and the names of the 12 apostles of Christ will be written on the foundation stones. This is found in Revelation 21:12 through 14. Truly, man's headship and his created role as the glory of God are not mishaps of the curse. Rather, they are created from the beginning and gloriously redeemed for eternity. To review, men show forth God's glory in their physical bearing of strength and authority. Men share the masculine roles with God, including Father, Son, Bridegroom, King, and Priest. Men are the glory of God because they lead the human race in worship. How is woman the glory of man? 1 Corinthians 11:7 says woman is the glory of man. Verses 8 and 9 explain why. For man does not originate from woman, but woman from man. For indeed man was not created for the woman's sake, but woman for the man's sake. How does woman being from and for the man bring glory to him? Man is the only creature to have another creature fully in the image of God, tailor-made for him. This is a great honor and glory for man. The greatness of this truth will be highlighted if we consider God's other creatures, both lower and higher than man, the animals and the angels. Animals were made directly from the earth. They have mates, to be sure. There are daddy lions and mommy lions, boy ostriches and girl ostriches. But the female ostrich was not made from the side of the male ostrich, and the mommy lion was not made from the side of the daddy lion. They were all made simply and directly from the earth. None of these animals, male or female, has the image of God. They are magnificent beasts, but finally, just beasts. They are mated animals. This is a marvel. But what happens with man is far more wonderful. Angels, unlike the animals, do bear the image of God as men do. But unlike men, they are not given mates. Always referred to in the masculine and appearing as men, angels are organized in armies, not families. These masculine and military creatures spend their time singing God's praises, debating, working, ruling over nature, acting as God's emissaries, and making war, the elect angels against the fallen demons. Angels are intelligent, powerful, awesome creatures. Nevertheless, they were not given mates, and thus they do not receive the kind of sexual glory human men do. These things in combination, the image of God, the female coming from the male, romantic and sexual love, marriage, babies, genealogies, are a unique glory to the human race in this age. Particularly this glory belongs to man, because it is an honor for him to have someone made from him and for him. There is nothing else like this in the revealed universe except Christ and his own bride. Man is allowed to picture Christ in having his own bride come out of his side. This is definitely a glory. Genesis 6 gives evidence that the fallen angels were jealous of man's glorious gift. Genesis 6:2 says, "The sons of God," always an expression for angels in the Old Testament, "saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves, whomever they chose." Apparently, these fallen angels were jealous that men had beautiful women to be their counterparts. The demons, perhaps angry that God had not made anything like this for them, transgressed the angel-human boundary and somehow took women for themselves. God washed away these illicit angel-human bondings and their offsprings in the flood. It is very possible that Jude reveals the fate of these same wicked angels in verse 6 when he writes, "And angels who did not keep their own domain, but abandoned their proper abode, he has kept in eternal bonds under darkness for the judgment of the great day." The fact that angels lack wives may also explain 1 Corinthians 11:10 in part, "Therefore the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels." 1 Peter 1:12 says that the angels long to look into the redeeming grace of God in the lives of human beings. Angels are not saved by grace, according to Hebrews 2:16. They are either elect or damned. Saving grace is something they learn about by watching us. But if we, as human beings, do not handle authority properly in the worship of God, which is something angels understand very well, then how can we teach them about gracious love, which is something they understand very little? Perhaps this is what Paul is thinking, that our ability to worship God in proper relationship to headship keeps us from ruining our testimony, not only among ourselves, but also before unseen angelic observers. In summary, woman is a great glory to man. He alone of all creatures, not the animals below, not the angels above, has a person fully in the image of God who is made from him and for him. Woman's sexual response is a special glory to man. We have talked about woman as man's helper, companion, and counselor. However, we have not focused on sexual and erotic love, which are a very important part of our lives. In God's plan, beauty and glory are inextricably linked with sexual love. The whole book of Song of Solomon is devoted to expressing the beauty and wonder of erotic love between a man and a woman. That book is filled with passages of the husband praising the beauty and feminine charms of his wife, and the wife praising the man for his masculine traits. Romantic love is something God intended to be a unique and crowning glory in our sexuality. Other passages on this topic, Psalm 45, the royal wedding psalm, Ezekiel 16, which compares the love of God and Israel to a husband and wife over a lifetime. Ephesians 5 reveals the husbandly love of Christ for his church, and Revelation 21 unveils the new Jerusalem in bridal glory. Sexual glory is an important gender theme, reflective of God's glory. After making love to his wife, the bridegroom in Song of Solomon 5:1 says, "I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I have gathered my myrrh along with my balsam. I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I have drunk my wine and my milk." Notice the bridegroom uses the most lavish metaphors imaginable to describe the sensual delights of love. He also emphasizes that all these treasures belong to him. His wife is his garden, and the delights therein are his. The rest of the verse is spoken by the narrator of the song, probably God himself, who says, "Eat, friends, drink, and imbibe deeply, O lovers." God blesses the pleasure and the joy of sexual love in marriage. In lovemaking, the man actually enters the woman. His entering into the woman's body is likened to entering a garden or opening a spring or well. God made the woman's body and her soul to have a response to the man's entering. What is this response? Should it be indifference, yawning, mild interest? Ideally, the response should register somewhere between thrill and wild ecstasy. This is the orgasmic joy and climax of the sexual response which God created the woman to have. When that response is not there, there is a sense of lost glory. There are many reasons why this response may not be there. This may not be the fault of the man or the woman. Nevertheless, if a man's wife does not respond to him or cannot respond to him, something that was to be a unique glory to him, an affirmation of his manhood, has been lost. Man can earn glory and affirm his manhood in only two areas. One area is the world of work or combat, whether academics, sports, war, or business, where he goes out into nature to conquer, rule, and subdue. The other is the world of relationships and love, where he wins the response of the woman. If the response of his wife is taken away, something very basic to his psychological and sexual foundation will be taken away. Many times such a man will feel that his glory is lost. Before going further, I want to shift our focus from thinking about woman as the glory of man, the individual male, to thinking of woman as the glory of mankind. Is this valid to do? In the first and tightest focus, we see woman from and for man, the male. If we step back and see man as the glory of God, we can also see woman as the glory of man in the sense of mankind. Man is the glory of God, the Creator. Woman is the glory of the creature. Remember the creation scene from Genesis 2. God takes some clay and builds the first masculine body. He puts the breath of life into the man, and he becomes a living soul. In so doing, God gives the man an aura of glory, one that bespeaks authority, strength, and power, the capacity to be a father, a son, a bridegroom, and a king. That is, he makes man the glory of God. Then God takes a portion of flesh and bone from the man and makes a second human being. He makes this body from human flesh and puts the divine image in this human being, just as he did with the first. But this time, this creature is covered with a different aura of glory. This person is not covered with the glory of God. This human, the woman, is covered with the glory of mankind, the glory of being the creature. What does this mean? What is man, the creature, really? He is not all-powerful or full of authority. The scriptures ask what man is, that God should be mindful of him. He is a vapor. His glory is but a flower. He is like the grass. Human beings are actually weak, transitory, and dependent, needing to walk by faith. When God glorified the woman, he made that delicate, transitory, needy, dependent nature beautiful and resplendent. He highlighted all the creaturely traits in her. Think about woman's physical being. Her bones are smaller and weaker. Is that a shame to her? No. Delicacy is considered beautiful because God made the relative weakness of woman glorious. Most women don't mind their smaller frames because they rightly sense that the fineness of their bones is beautiful. It is not a humiliation to be weak in this sense. Delicate features are beautiful. Men are not built in soul or body to be responders. Customarily, they are unreadable. Yet God fashioned the entire feminine facial structure for responsiveness. He glorified the responder nature in her by giving her bigger eyes, softer facial muscles, fuller lips, and sensitive skin which displays many more shades of color. Woman's emotional range is greater than the man's. Physically and biochemically, her highs tend to be higher, her lows lower. She can change faster, and in so doing, she pictures in another way the responsive and transitory nature of the creature. 1 Corinthians 11:15 says that long hair is a glory to a woman because it was given to her for a covering. The woman's body is smaller, softer, and rounder. Her weakness calls for protection. Her beauty calls for adornment. Artists invariably depict Eve with long and beautiful hair. Her hair was a glorious covering, her first ornament and her first protection. The consensus through history, down to the little boys of our modern day, is that long hair is beautiful and feminine. Women have added many other coverings for protection and adornment, veils, full dresses, cloaks, all kinds of jewels, and ornaments. Men wear clothing and some ornaments, but the emphasis is not nearly so great. Being covered and adorned is basic to woman's glory as a creature. In a way, it is not to man's. Finally, woman's roles are a glory to the man. Her roles are the counterparts to his. Man is father, she is mother. He is bridegroom, she is bride. He is husband, she is wife. He is king, she is queen. The feminine roles answer to and correspond to the masculine roles. What we do in these corresponding roles emphasizes how our glories differ. There are certain activities which are fundamental to the masculine roles. Man should be the initiating lover, leading, protecting, providing, and husbanding. What does the woman do in her roles that corresponds to the man? Wherein man is the initiating lover, woman is a responding lover. Man pursues the woman. He makes love to her. She receives him and responds to his love. This is pictured in our bodies, in our souls, and in our spirits. Woman is adorned and glorified with beauty in order to please and receive her man. When we shift the emphasis from man as lover to man as leader, the emphasis in woman shifts from responder to follower-helper. New Testament submission emphasizes the woman's response to and support of the man's leadership. This is not about beating her into place. Wifely submission is about supporting the husband as leader and fulfilling her role as his helper. When woman is life-giver, man must be her husbandman, protecting and providing. If a woman stays home to focus on giving life to others, she cannot be out in the world earning a living. She has to trust the man to be the principal breadwinner. The work of life-giver makes the woman vulnerable. It requires dependence upon someone else to do most of the providing and protecting. Psalm 128:3 says to the man who fears the Lord, "Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house, your children like olive plants around your table." To be a fruitful vine, a wife must be willing to receive her husband's provisions, respond to his care, and embrace fruit bearing. She must be willing to see herself as a fruitful vine. If she wants only to be like the man, by his side or leading him in the world, she will never be a beautiful garden for him in the very heart of his house, as Psalm 128 says. And he will never fulfill his husbandman role. Fulfilling these roles takes faith and a willingness to be dependent on the part of the woman, and diligence and service on the part of the man. Virtues of the responder are the essence of femininity. 1 Peter 3:4 tells us the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit is precious in the sight of God. What is a gentle, quiet spirit? The word gentle means meek, under authority. It is synonymous with submission. The word quiet means full of faith, not troubled, not upset or fearful. It is synonymous with trust. From God's viewpoint, the height of femininity, its most treasured and valuable essence, is the gentle, quiet spirit. These two qualities, submission, the opposite of a rebellious, contentious spirit, and trust, the opposite of a fearful, worried spirit, are the height of feminine beauty. Notice that these two virtues are creaturely qualities. They are virtues of a responder. Submission is an attitude toward the authority of God. Trust is an attitude about the faithfulness of God. All people, both men and women, are creatures, and all people should have submission and faith. But because woman is the glory of the creature, these creaturely virtues are brought to a special height and beauty in her, just as courage and integrity are emphasized in the man, who is not the glory of the creature, but who is instead the glory of God. If all is not yet clear on the differing glories of man and woman, Ephesians 5:22-33 clears away the fog. Husbands are to be like Christ. Wives are to be like the church. Men are to take as their role model the masculine Christ. Wives are to take as their role model the feminine church, created from Christ's side, even as Eve was created from the side of Adam. Husbands are to model their love and leadership after Christ. Wives are to follow the pattern of the church's subjection in her relationship to Christ. Christ and the church are the role models that anchor and amplify the glories of man and woman. To be the glory of God means that a man in marriage takes Christ's roles and seeks to imitate him. To be the glory of man means that woman takes the believer's roles toward her husband, the roles of the church toward Christ. Thus far, we have been emphasizing the differences between the sexes. While man and woman are the same in image, in glory they are different. Consider 1 Corinthians 11:11-12. For the very important balancing truth of interdependence. However, in the Lord, neither is woman independent of man, nor is man independent of woman. For as the woman originates from the man, so also the man has his birth through the woman, and all things originate from God. Paul has been talking about the basic and foundational differences between the sexes, what I call sex classic. Man is the leader, woman is the helper. Man is strong, woman is beautiful. Man is brave, woman is merciful. Man is aggressive, woman is conciliatory. Man is logical, woman is intuitive. These basic characteristics have been observed through all time and in all cultures as typical of the sexes. But as soon as you say something is true about one sex, you sense that in a way it is also true about the other sex. Paul knows this. Paul has just been emphasizing that it is important that woman came from man, that Eve came from Adam, that Adam was the head and Eve was his helper. He has just been teaching this. But then he says, it is also true that man is from the woman. Men are born from their mothers. Therefore, there is an interdependence. Woman came from man. Men come from women. But notice they do not come from each other in exactly the same way. The way that woman came from man is in the original creation. God made the first woman from the side of the first man. But the way that men come from women is that little boy babies grow in their mother's wombs and are born. So while each comes from the other, it is not in exactly the same way. Adam did not have a womb and he did not give birth to baby Eve. Sons do not come out of their mother's sides. The sexes are balanced, but they are different. In the balance, there is interdependence. The sexes do the same things, but in different ways, such that they are interdependent, but not interchangeable. This is important. Let me give you four more examples. Women lean on men, but men lean on women. Song of Solomon 8:5 describes a familiar picture. Who is this coming from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? The poet sees the Shulamite leaning on the arm of her lover. This is the classic picture of a woman resting on a man's shoulder. The woman is usually smaller, shorter, and there is a time she likes to lean on her husband. But Proverbs 31:11 says, the husband's heart safely trusts his wise wife. To trust means to depend on, to rest on with all one's weight. So here is the picture, not of the wife leaning physically or spiritually on the man, but of the man resting on the woman, depending on her. In Proverbs 31, the husband is sitting at the gate, helping run the community. He is depending on his wife's virtue and strength to run his household, take care of his children, manage his wealth, and rule his servants. Proverbs 12:4 says, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. Certainly, the man is presented in a position of almost horrifying vulnerability. If his wife is not wise, his bones will rot. He is depending upon her. If she lets him down, he will suffer decay at the core of his structure. In a previous section, we learned how the woman glorifies the man with her sexual response. When she responds to her husband with desire, it glorifies him, affirming his masculinity. Yet his desire for her is also a glory to her. Song of Solomon 7:10 records the mature statement of the Shulamite's marital security. I am my beloved's, and his desire is toward me. If the man desires the woman, seeks and pursues her, it is a glory to her, just as her receiving him is a glory to him. She is glorified by his pursuit. He is glorified by her response. They are mutually glorified, but not in exactly the same way. Man protects woman. We all have the picture of the man going off to war to protect the nation from the enemy. If an attacker comes, we expect the man to be the first one to step forth to beat off the criminal physically. But there are ways women protect men. In Scripture, women frequently protect men physically by hiding them in their inner domains. Rahab hides the spies in Joshua 2. David's wife helps him escape in 1 Samuel 19. Spiritually, women protect men with their purity, as we have already discussed. Abigail petitions David and thus protects him from his murderous fury against Nabal. When a woman is pure, she protects a man from his lower nature. She makes it easier for him to be a good man. An evil woman opens up a man to his own destruction. What about nurturing? We know women are nurturers. They give life and nurture to their children and families. But the husbandman role is a nurturing role as well. Christ nurtures the church and expects husbands to follow his lead toward their wives. God is a vine dresser, one who tends his gardens carefully, as Isaiah 5:1-7 records. Part of a man's manliness is learning to care for his domain, whether it is his wife, farm, or business. Men should be nurturers, but not because they should morph into housewives. They should be nurturers because they fulfill their role as husbandmen in their domains, protecting, cultivating, and making productive all that is under their charge. Man and woman both glorify each other. They nurture each other. They lean on and protect one another. But they do not do so in the same ways. Those who make the interdependence of man and woman a reason for sexual interchangeability are either foolish or wicked, because the created differences are essential. Man is man. He is the leader, the husband, the father, the glory of God. Woman is the helper, the mother, the glory of man. One must never deny the truths of sexual difference in an attempt to bolster the truths of sexual mutuality. The interdependence and mutuality of man and woman are built upon their differences, all leading to the glory of God Himself. To use the interdependence of the sexes as a weapon to destroy their created differences is wicked. It not only destroys the glory of God in our sexuality, but it cuts us off from one another and from ourselves. Instead, we must handle these doctrines the same way we handle the deity and humanity of Christ. We teach and understand both, holding them together as a non-contradictory unity. Fulfilling your glory of man aspect is not dependent upon being beautiful physically. Those who are unremarkable in body are nevertheless capable of apprehending the marvel of sexuality, the wonder of the glory of God in man, the beauty of the glory of man and woman. Holding these truths as precious in our souls is the foundation of a feminine confidence and beauty which will be appreciated by both God and men. To illustrate these glory truths, consider a few meditations on ice dancers. One main reason why ice dancing is soaring in popularity is because it pictures the beauty of sexual glory. The dancers picture masculine and feminine glory coming together in interdependence and beauty. Remember, our bodies are not all that we are, and they are not the most important thing that we are, yet our bodies are consistent with who we are. Thus, they can illustrate beautifully what God intends for our whole beings. In these dancers, we can see some of the beauty and the glory that God intended to be in the spirit of us all as we dance and skate through life together. The first characteristic of an accomplished ice dancing or pairs skating team is that they are individually strong skaters. Skating weaknesses will be exacerbated in partnership, not covered up. It is the same in life. We must be strong individuals, whether man or woman, full of the basic virtues, if we are ever to be a glory with the opposite sex. Ice dancers sometimes skate side by side, not even touching, doing the same thing at the same time. This reflects man's and woman's commonality and their ability to do the same things. The dramatic moves, the spirals, lifts, and throws, especially picture the glory of sexuality. In the death spiral, the man braces himself in order to hold the entire weight of the woman with her head mere inches off the ice. It requires strength and stability from him. What does it require from her? Amazing trust and courage to be willing to be that vulnerable and dependent in order to create the beautiful motion. To perform lifts, the man must work continually on strength. He must lift and hold the woman in a stable position, sometimes even at high speed. That the lifts glorify the woman by literally exalting her is plain to see. The throws require even more strength from the man and more courage from the woman. She has to be dependent in allowing the man to launch her, and yet independent in landing on her own skates with only her own balance to guide her. Sometimes the man drops the woman. How do you think she feels? Who do you think is mad? What about the times the man does everything right, but the woman falls and spoils the routine? What a picture of marriage. Sometimes the husband, who is supposed to be supporting his wife, drops her on the ice of life, as it were, and makes her very angry. Sometimes he does everything perfectly, but she is the one who falls down and ruins the whole sequence. I wonder how many pairs have walked off the ice and said, "Forget this." Pairs succeed only when both the man and the woman keep forgiving and keep trying. He has to keep working at being strong and stable. She has to keep working on trust, proper dependence, and balance, even when he throws her cockeyed. They must practice harmony until they move as one. I know a young woman who is teaching her fiancé to dance, not only for the enjoyment of it, but for the tutorial it will be for their whole marriage. As she says, it is amazing how the techniques of ballroom dancing picture the dynamics of the man-woman relationship. Most people not only see, they feel the beauty and glory of a couple spinning around the floor in harmony. Man leading, woman following, both moving as one to music that envelops them. This is the glory aspect of sexuality. This is a picture of how God intends the relationship of man and woman to be. Not marching, not dragging, not pushing or pulling, rather moving as one to a music that comes from beyond them both. Here are 5 questions to help you evaluate your understanding of God's plan for the sexes and their individual glories. Do you enjoy being a woman? Do you like men and think they are a good idea? Do you see the glory of each sex as different, yet wonderful in its own way? Do you see the glory of each sex as completing and complementing the other? Or do you think that men must be put down so women can be raised up, or vice versa? Finally, do you love beauty? Is it in your soul? Do you seek to give it to others? Woman is the quintessential creature. If man is the head of the creation, woman is the crown. If he is the first person, the leader, she is the last person, the completion. In her, all the creaturely traits and roles are beautified, made resplendent, and highlighted. It is a glorious thing to be a woman. It is a glory different from the man's glory, but it is a great glory, for we all are creatures. Our privilege and calling as women is to highlight creatureliness in our beings, to model the gentle spirit, to display faith, trust, and peacefulness, thus adorning our lives with a lasting beauty that pleases God Himself.